listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, April 26th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. Glad to be here as always. And glad you're feeling much better.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate all the well wishes. It's good to know that we have this community around us where we all care about each other, and I really appreciated that. Thank you for joining us live, speaking of that wonderful community, and those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. So looking forward to tonight's topic, but before we get into that, we're of course going to start with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, tonight is a topic that I am, of course, looking forward to. It's going to give me plenty of opportunities to be a history geek here, but I think that we're going to apply this idea of taking the long view in life on a couple of different levels. And Dr. Vicki, you were, you know, great to point out that one of these is looking at it on the context of our life. So I think maybe that's kind of where we can start and build out from there, you know, start on the more macro, on the human life scale, and then kind of go and see how kind of our journey through trying to understand the world around us has kind of progressed as far as we know it.
Well, you know, it's so true, Michael. I love this topic because I often have to correct myself and get perspective of where we are in time, you know, and in our evolution. And but I think even as individuals, when you look at your life 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and 40 years, 50 years ago for some people, you know, how far we've come and the ground that we've covered, and, you know, and again, where we're going, you know, in that long view of where we're going, not necessarily of setting goals or anything, but to be hopeful. And I say that because I had a conversation with a client yesterday, and it, you know, she's only in her 40s, but she's kind of given up, you know, given up on love, given up on her family. She's given up. She's just flatlined, given up. And, you know, my question was, aren't you the least bit curious about what could happen, all the possibilities? Look how far you've come. Mm-hmm. Look where you are. And that life is a mystery, and I've seen the strangest things happen, so anything is possible. But again, sometimes we need to do that. We need to, and again, not dwell on it, but get perspective of, you know, the ground we've covered and how things have changed. It's like I told somebody the other day, my kids took me out to a jazz club, which I really appreciate. I haven't been out, you know, socially, and, well, since COVID started, and happened to be talking to some people outside, and one guy said, "I hope you don't mind if I light up a joint here." I said, "Oh, I don't care. You know, I don't do that stuff, but go ahead." And because, by the way, it is legal in Canada for those who are listening. And so I said, "You know what's interesting? In my lifetime," I said, "I knew a guy back in high school who went to jail for 10 years for possession of a joint."
Mm-hmm.
But everybody smoked. You could smoke delivering babies in the hospital, you know.
Yeah.
And now, smoking cigarettes, you're like a pariah. But I walk down the street and people are smoking joints on the street and there's wafts of smoke. Everybody's getting secondhand stoned. You know?
Is that why everybody's so happy in Canada?
It could be. You know, but that's a perspective, right? That's a long view.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, this guy looked at me, he's probably around 40. And so he missed that era of people going to jail for a joint. And so it's that long view of the ground we've covered. And, you know, as the pendulum swings, we're going to have a lot of different changes socially.
Absolutely.
You know, prohibition back in the 30s, 1920s, 30s. Well, that didn't work so well.
No.
And
rarely does.
So, and you know, so now they are talking about how bad alcohol is. And, you know, there was a woman out of Vancouver who was suing because she got breast cancer because she didn't know that if you drank alcohol, you could get breast cancer. And I had never heard of such a thing, but I thought, wow, are we going there?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it's just so, you know, the perspective of that long view and seeing where we've come.
Right.
And yet what's coming is most of us are just taking one day at a time. But it's really my curiosity that you know, keeps me going. And say, what will happen today?
Yeah,
and then Michael, I know you're the history freak, and so am I, but not as much as you. I was very recently watching one of the last Uhtred movies. You know that Kingdom,
the Last whatever. Kingdom. It's
yeah,
the BBC series.
The Viking show, and how brutal,
yeah,
how overtly brutal the kings were, and you know, just people and how they lived, you know, and they made sacrifices and so on. I think, wow, that's not that long ago when you think about, you know, history overall.
I know.
1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, that's not very long. And so I think about 50 years about when you went to jail for a joint. And then I think about the medieval days when the Christians broke your hands if you played an instrument because music was just not allowed in the church. And look that up, people. It's really crazy stuff that you could not sing or dance or do poetry and stuff at a certain time during the medieval period. And so there were these machines that they actually put your hands into so that you'd never play an instrument again. Just crazy stuff that people come up with. And you think, well, I don't know if we've really evolved in some ways, but we've evolved.
We have. I mean, yeah. And I know it's hard to see. It really is when you look at society now and how cruel we are to one another. I get it, and I don't want to downplay it, but I do want to add context. And that context is that, you know, it wasn't quite so long ago that a public execution in modern
yeah.
societies was a going out thing.
You'd yep.
get the kids, you know, pack some food. We're going to go out and watch the hanging. And that's not even a regional thing. That was global. I would also point out that, you know, I think it's important in our lives to look at how far we've come and to look at how much further we have to go when we're dealing with a lot of things.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of the taking the long view in your personal life. You can see how much things change. So morality changes. You were talking about the kind of pendulum swinging back towards alcohol again in terms of its immorality. And, you know, that's in that regard, it's entirely subjective. And that's why you have to ground yourself in reason, and you have to have reasonable a basis for your beliefs and your ethics, because the times will change. And you always have to ask yourself, you know, am I putting stock into this because I believe it or because of societal cultural pressures? Mm-hmm. It's common that we're especially looking back into Western history from the, you know, slave period all the way, you know, going back to the colonization period and colonialism, et cetera. And you often hear the argument, and there is some validity to this in the sense that the pressures was much higher in terms of what behavior to have. You get the opinion that, you know, it is, some of these people were a product of their time. And I think it's absolutely contextual, but at the same time these people existed, there were other people in those same societies that were speaking out against it. So I think that's also something we need to think about, and I think we need to gauge how are we going to be viewed and how are we going to view ourselves 10, 20 years from now. So the pendulum swings on morality so often. I think that we need to start by having a reasonable basis for our beliefs, and then if presented with new information, you know, sometimes we have these inherent biases that we're just not aware of, and then through different viewpoints being offered, we will come to greater awareness. But I think we all need to keep pushing for it, but we all need to be grounded. So that's kind of my take on the life aspect of taking the long view. Last thing I'm going to rant about on that, it is important to remember your victories. Remember the challenges you've overcome. Remember the chaos and the pain and the frustrations and all the little things that you've already endured. And sometimes it can be almost a weight. You feel like, well, I've already done all this. It weighs on you. I challenge you to instead look at it as, I've gone through all of this. I have taken all of this stuff that life has thrown at me, and I have survived, and I'm still here. Yep. And you've done it once. You can do it again. It is proof that you can survive and thrive. So I would take those lessons from, you know, my little rant on the human lifespan aspect of the long view. But,
well, I don't think it's a rant at all. I think those are really good points,
Michael. Thank you.
I think that, you know, to look at where we are, it's very easy to get myopic, you know, in that micro view of, you know, our everyday stresses and our everyday things. And I'm just as guilty as anybody else. You know, you look at the bank account and you say, oh, my God. And so you sweat it for 2 days and then it goes away and you say, I've been here before. I've been worse mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
And I'll figure it out. and then, you know, it's again, seeing that bigger picture. It's very hard to do when we are inundated with, bombarded, if I might say, you know, news of violence, news of wars, news of, and it's what's happening now. Ooh, well, now we're into Sudan, you know, and it's one thing after another. I have to remind myself, this is not new.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
there's always a war. Always. There isn't a
actually fewer now.
You know, and you're probably right. I don't have a measurement on that. But there's always been, if it's not a skirmish in your neighborhood, it's some kind of tribe versus another tribe versus, you know, the church versus the pagans versus,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it's one over another or this or that. And it's been going on forever. And so this is not new. It's just, what's the war of the day?
Right.
and see, we're not in it. So I really have to preface and qualify this, because if we were in a war zone, we would have something different to say about it.
We would. We would. And that's kind of the sad thing, is that when you look at history and you grade on a curve, it doesn't take away from the very real impact that it's having on people's lives. There's fighting in Sudan again. There's been fighting in Yemen. There's the ongoing conflict where many are dying in Ukraine. And it's Syria is still a chaotic place of violence. You know, it is, an unfortunate constant, but if you were to look at the total population of those alive, there are fewer people that are engaging in violence than we can tell from what we know of the historic record, would probably be the best way to say that. Based on, you know, looking at the remains of different populations and seeing how many of them died from obvious violent means compared to modern day stats per 1,000 or 100,000 people. I get that it's a lot, but you also have to realize there's 7.5 billion of us.
You know, and that's a huge consideration. There has never before been nearly 8 billion people on this planet. And so, again, you want to contextualize it. It's, you know, the numbers, and you look at the numbers. And so, yeah, it's, we could say, oh, there's more violence. Well, there's more numbers. So it's easy to overlook that, Michael, what you just pointed out. And so the flip side of that, which has also been a constant in history, is hopefulness, aspiration, inspiration, innovation, creativity, and look where we are with technology. You know, there's always that moving forward. So while there are these undercurrent ripples of who gets what and for how much, and it's always over money and resources, isn't it?
It is, often. And you can boil down a lot of conflicts that have the facade of religion, but deep down they're not really about religion as much as they're about the same basic things.
Yeah.
Tribalism, power, access to resources. Yeah. And again, you want to talk about how, oh, there's no war in nature. Oh, there very much is. The warfare aspect of humanity is the most natural survivalist instinct there is. It's to protect resources against another tribe. It's something that we've had to do since the beginning, where resources were scarce and a tribe could come and steal your food, or worse.
Yep.
That's just simply a more elaborate version. We have grown in complexity, but is the base drive any different? I will also say, when we're now growing into the long view of human history, you know, we had touched on it a couple weeks ago, where we can say that anatomically, you know, human Homo sapiens, human beings, have been around 200 to 300,000 years, you know, probably closer to the 300,000 year mark, which is just insane. And we have only history from, you know, literate cultures from 6,000 years ago, roughly. We have, you know, of course, many archaeological finds of structures, paintings, art, but no writing. You know, we don't know what really happened other than what we can kind of guess at based on some ruins and things like that. And that is just insane to think about the vast, vast majority of human existence being completely unknown to us.
And what we think we know, we don't know at all.
Exactly.
And
that's
that,
why, you know, I had to
exactly.
I had to preface the thing I said about us being, you know, at a relatively more peaceful time, as far as we know, based on the archaeological things that we know about. I'd also like to take an aside. Every time I say, hear, preface, I think of a wonderful joke by a comedian. I just blanked on his name, although I thought of it. Gary Gulman, wonderful guy. Every time he says it, I have to say it. I can't help myself. He was talking in a bit, and he says, preface, or if this is the first time you're hearing it out loud instead of reading it, preface. And he said, do you ever do that? You ever have to go around saying something a certain way until you correct it? And he thought, how long have I had the verbal equivalent of spinach in my teeth? How long have I been embarrassing myself with this? I'm sorry. That's just where my mind was going. But coming back to the long view of life and what we don't know about prehistory.
I'd like to think that we're beginning to open our minds. I know there's very closed-minded people. There's no question about that. But very recently, if anybody follows the Curse of Oak Island, I'm a freak for it, watch it every week, they're on the verge, Michael, of rewriting history as we know it, based on early Roman coin and other artifacts they're finding on the island now. Now, it predates, you gotta think, okay, everybody thinks Columbus in 1492, we know that's not true because the Vikings were across.
Right.
But this predates the Vikings. So what they're on the verge of is not just looking for treasure. Mm-hmm. It's become an historical hunt, if you will, on what went on here. Mm-hmm. Who were these people? Who, and of course, they're going back to the Knights of Templar, you know, very often.
It's a popular, group.
And so I find that it's really piqued my curiosity about what we think we know, we don't know, and artifacts. And who's been looking at the artifacts previous? You know, everybody has a skewed view of mm-hmm. what they're looking at. They could have seen that 50 years ago, and they discard it because it must have been this, you know.
Absolutely. And
so now we're beginning to open our minds.
We are. And that's one thing that I love about history, and especially modern history, academic history, is that any good historian will say that when you write about history, you're obviously giving inflection from the time that you live in and basing it on that. And when they read historians from the past, even 100 years ago, they will put in those, you know, major disclaimers. Hey, this is being written in a certain context. You have to understand their viewpoint here might not be accurate. You talk about ancient history, you have to take it with a grain of salt, because these ancient peoples weren't writing so that we would have an accurate idea of who they were. They were writing for themselves and to, you know, to express things to their culture, other peoples.
Something that really struck me over 20 years ago, I came across someone who owned a Bible and loaned it to me for a couple of weeks so I could look through it. And it was put out by the Masons, oddly enough, back in, you know, at the turn of the 20th century. So it was very old Bible, huge thing. But in it was all these, you know, the little line drawings. There's a name for it. I can't remember. But it had all of the fauna of the day, mm-hmm. the geography of the day, the clothing of the day, you know, back during the time of apparent Christ. And I went, what a picture. Because when you think of Christianity in a Bible, we always refer to what we think it might have looked like, but really it's in today's view. And this depicted a whole different imagery. And I was really struck by it, that it was the first I had seen. Obviously, there's more that I've not seen, but that was the first time I went, wow, what the world looked like mm-hmm. at that time. Very different. Everything from the plants to the animals to
absolutely.
You know, how the grass grew and where it grew and where the water was and the sand and the, you know, everything was different. So we do tend to filter through what we're experiencing in this moment, and that's why the long view is a really important element. Yeah.
And I think when we look at the long view of humanity, we do see patterns. We do see a lot of brutality, but we also see the counter to that. I've always said that humanity will express the very worst and the very best that nature and existence has to offer, because we have the sentience to express it. And at the same time that you have this brutality, you also have people, you know, keeping the flickering light of enlightenment and awareness going. Sometimes it gets dimmer, sometimes it gets brighter, but it's constantly going. And I think that we can be part of that tradition, a part of that, you know, link in the chain that stretches back tens and hundreds of thousands of years. The constant fight for more knowledge, more awareness, better understanding. You know, and I've been really loving the chat. You know, there's some good shout outs to some interesting shows that kind of talk about some of this. And there's been a couple, you know, things like, you know, one comment I do want to touch on from Santana. I definitely understand the idea when it comes to space travel, which was the topic of discussion in chat, when we have so many things to focus on Earth. And that's a very valid point. But I do think that exploring what's out there through space travel, through probes, through astronomy, it will lead us to a better understanding of ourselves, because we are star stuff. We are part of this cosmos. Our existence doesn't end at the barriers of our atmosphere. And I think that we will find more truth of ourselves when we look at the total breadth and context of the universe, the ultimate long view, at least in this, you know, multiverse dimension. But it is important to put things into proper context when it comes to life. It's important to look at our problems as challenges that can be overcome because we've already done it as a society, as a people. There is an ebb and flow of time. As I said earlier, the light of enlightenment and kindness and awareness and understanding is brighter in certain periods of history, and sometimes it begins to dim. But we all have to be part of that process of keeping that flame going, of being that link in the chain of keep pushing for what we believe in, and that's an open-minded, understanding, accepting mind view.
Yeah.
And if we can promote that, we have to always kind of, and when I say battle, I mean battle in terms of oppose in peaceful ways those that would try to push fear and xenophobia and a paranoid mentality that everything is a threat, because you lose something very important in that. And
Michael, it reminds me of the words of Erich Fromm, who was a book he wrote in the 1920s. He was a psychologist, sociologist, and he warned of industrialization. And when you take people out of their desired, you know, careers or work, and you take people out of their apprenticeship and you put them into the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all kind of living in a factory now, right? And he said, you put them in a factory. He said, then you provide them with entertainment so they don't retaliate. But after that, that's going to wear off too, the entertainment.
Yeah.
Because you cannot inhibit the human spirit. And it will be the spirit of people that will, you know, through various means, desire to be expressed and heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that so many years ago, but it has stuck with me that what we're seeing is these stirrings of people, this restlessness, and they don't know what it is. They don't know how to, you know, release that or express it, but there is this spiritual restlessness and people wanting to know who they are. What's my purpose? You know, what do I do? And go ahead.
I just say, when I'm thinking about that, I completely agree, but I'd also point out that entertainment has been a very powerful mover of enlightenment and awareness. I mean,
yeah.
I will tell you a couple things. I mean, obviously, when it comes to LGBTQ rights, Will and Grace gets thrown out a lot. I think that's very true. You know what I'm going to tell you? You know, long have I intellectually agreed with the philosophy that everybody should live the life that they want, that homosexual people or anybody on the spectrum of sexuality, they're not immoral or bad in any way. They're just like every other human, a mix of good and bad. That's just life. But what the thing that really brought it home emotionally for me was television and movies, and where I could see displayed examples, and I thought, yeah, that you start to root for these characters in a meaningful way. I know they're kind of silly examples, perhaps, but one of them, shout out to one of my favorite shows, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It is a show where it's a comedy that takes place in New York with a police precinct. The police captain is an openly gay black man who has, of course, dealt with discrimination for a long time, which gets brought up. But he has a wonderful relationship with his husband in the show. And that, you know, was something that really was more of an emotional kind of breakthrough, where I really just enjoyed the relationship, sympathized. The other was Star Trek Discovery. In that show, there's two characters, a lead scientist and a lead, you know, chief medical officer who are married and in a relationship. And, you know, it really kind of brought it home in a more emotional level. I'd always believed in it intellectually, but now I really more understood it in a better way. So entertainment, yes, it can be used to pacify, but it can also be used to make people want change. And
you know, the thing is, this is not new. And so when we take the long view, you know, for instance, back in, you know, various points of Egyptian times, homosexuality was duh, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah.
You know, and it was openly out there. And then, of course, it went underground. And most people have lived this secretly for decades, hundreds of years, you know, thousands of years, depending on where you live geographically, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of power structure you had to live under. And now, of course, it's more, you know, it's that freer expression of this is who I am, and it's cool. But if you've lived, and we're still in that segue, if you will, of adjusting, because a lot of people do. We live mm-hmm. very secluded, isolated, myopic lives where I know of people who have never seen a black man or woman. Oddly enough,
mm-hmm.
you're kidding me. You've never seen someone of color. No, they haven't, because of the life that they have led. So when they see someone of color, it's like a shock to the system. Oh, my God. But hello, they've been living, you yeah. know, people of color have been on the planet forever. So I think what we're doing is in that entertainment form, such as shows and mm-hmm. movies, and is it does have that educational value. I think what Eric Fromm was talking about was, you know, like games and, you know, distracting us from what it is that we want, you know, and what
true.
We desire spiritually, you know, like in the who of what we are. I was talking to my daughter who's presently got a job in Ohio, my second daughter, and she finds it really interesting that everybody, in her view, everybody in the U.S. is obsessed with education. Like, where did you go to school? And I said, you know, this is a very cultural thing. She gets off of it by, you know, gets out of it by saying I was raised in Canada. And they go, oh. She goes, well, I took a couple of courses from Cornell. I did this. And they go, oh. But here in Alberta, when you move to some place like the province of Alberta in Canada, they say, oh, what do you do?
You
see, what do you do for a living? You go to BC and they say, oh, you moved to BC. Did you buy something? Because they want to know how much money you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cultural thing.
It is.
And I mean by culture of the area and how that area is cultured.
Oh, and the socioeconomic strata that you're in. Because I will tell you, I kind of get the perception, I guess, but for working class people, that's not a question you ask because it doesn't matter. You know, so that, and I think that's the large majority of the population too. But I need to touch on this real quick. We're going over our time in terms of the topic, but the last thing I definitely wanted to touch on is you had talked about people of color. I'd say if we could stand back and see the entirety of the modern, you know, Homo sapien in terms of that 200,000 to 300,000 years, we would realize that these, you know, quote unquote races, these ethnicities are more passing fads in the long view in the terms of it's a constant swirl of migration and intermixing of different peoples and cultures. I will say that if you look up Cheddar Man, it is a ancient skeleton, 11,000 years old in Britain, a native of that area. They did a DNA reconstruction and artist rendering, and based on what they could find from the DNA and the remaining skin, it was very well preserved. He would have been dark-skinned. And he shares DNA with the Britons there today. So,
hey, Michael, I got kicked out of the church teaching Sunday school when I was 14 for daring to ask, if Christ were there, he'd have brown skin, wouldn't he? Oh, they kicked me out.
Yeah. And that, you know, and the irony being that that was just, you know, a common thing for such a long period of time until the more Eurocentric kind of Catholic Church arose in the Middle Ages. But, And I will also point out that we also want to blame certain groups and people. We want to blame the Christian church for, and just Abrahamic religions for the homophobic cruelty visited. But there have been other cultures. The Romans were not particularly fond of it. Although you could do it on the down low, but if it was public knowledge, it'd be horribly embarrassing and you'd lose your position. So this is not, this is something that we have to tackle on a human fundamental level. So I always say, don't careful where you, you know, cast your villains and to think that if you just remove that you'd remove the problem. It's more intrinsic. We need to fight it on a deeper level, and we need to keep the fight going because it's constant vigilance, generation after generation. And we have to realize that these ideas of ethnicities, you know, it's very relative, and very relative to the last few thousand years.
I have to inject this, because Dr. Zach in the chat said, a lot of foreign cultures want to know how old you are and are you married.
Yeah, very true.
And Dr. Mike says, in Texas, we ask how many guns do you own. You know?
Yep. Exactly.
It's in context, right? Perception. So always, I guess what we're trying to say in this conversation is keep a longer view and a bigger view.
Mm-hmm.
Your life might feel a little, I would like to use a few adjectives here, but, let's just say challenged.
Yeah.
But just keep that bigger, wider view. What you've been through, what your people have been through, your ancestors have been mm-hmm. through, you are here today. And whatever that might be, a speck of dust in the big cosmos, it's still relevant. And it's important. And how we move forward, we have it in us to, do what we need to do. And there might be suffering. There's going to be challenges. Some days are going to suck. But something to do,
mm-hmm.
And if you can keep that curiosity and lightheartedness, truly, because you have to.
Yeah.
We have a lot of names in the chat, Michael, so we have to get to it here.
We do.
We have Deb, so just for those who are new, because I know we get a couple of new names in the chat, Santana being one. Michael draws an inner oracle self-discovery card of Dr. Kelly's, and I will support that with a tarot card, and we'll see what happens. A little message for you, maybe a little affirmation or a little information, and we see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, Dr. Deb, for you, I have number 39 in the life skills suit, education. Such a good card. Continual education is the key to individual and collective consciousness and personal success. Commit yourself to lifelong learning, educating yourself continually. If you don't know something, first look for the answers yourself, then ask if necessary. Gain education and advice through various sources, including people, but always strive to find your own answers. Look for lessons in life experience, situations, and circumstances. Make it your adage to listen, think, learn, grow, and live.
Deb, I got the Seven of Clubs in support of that. When it said sometimes you have to stop and ask questions, sometimes you have to stop and digest. So I want to say no question is dumb or stupid. It's a question that you can assimilate through your software of your brain. So I don't know how this kind of relates to you, except the Seven of Clubs indicates that caution, that little bit of hesitation, where I'm not saying push pause, but certainly take your time and digest. So you're learning, but you're trying to figure it out. So do what you need to do. That might take a day. But if we don't stop to say, I really need to stop and digest this before I take on new information, then we get ahead of ourselves and we have to back up and backspace, delete, all mm-hmm. that stuff. So I hope that makes sense to you. It's keep going with what you're doing, keep learning, but also assimilate.
Very said. Very well said. All right. And let's see. We have Santana next. I have for you number 25 in the spirituality suit. Power of belief. Belief is the most powerful force in the universe. One's beliefs are responsible for one's successes and failures. It's also important to realize that you cannot disbelieve in one thing without also believing in something else. Beliefs can help or hinder, enable or disable. Denial is a belief and means lying to oneself to evade responsibility. Ponder your beliefs to see if they are healthy or unhealthy, and proceed with conviction.
Well, I got the strength card for you, Santana. That's the will of spirit. It's in the major arcana of the tarot. The will of spirit, that power of belief, and you might feel challenged at times by others who might disagree with you, but also when people disagree with you, go calm. Just be calm in that moment. Know who you are. So if you're feeling like that, sometimes we have to stop talking and then know when to talk. That's kind of the message that I feel here. But that power of belief, just know who you are.
Yeah. All right. We have Dr. Edward next. I have number 38, another one in the life skills suit, open-mindedness. An open mind is sensible and grounded. An open mind avoids preconceived notions, especially ones that are based on a personal agenda, a pet theory, or a preferred belief. An open mind is not gullible or credulous. Rather, an open mind thinks critically and searches for additional possibilities. It absorbs knowledge and searches for credible solutions and conclusions.
I got the Nine of Hearts for you, Edward, for the support card. That's abundance, replenishment. What I want to say in the open-mindedness and the Nine of Hearts, the story that comes is you might find something alternative. I don't know if you're looking at alternative care, alternative health matters. It might be a naturopath or going to, I don't know, it could be a Reiki healer, you know, something different. But it's saying that finding that positivity, that encouragement that lifts your spirit so that there's this regeneration of energy. I like that. I think it's awesome. So I see there's a lot of healing going on, and good for you, because we all happen to know that you've been through a few things. But this just affirms to me that you're looking at something a little different than what you have been doing, and that's a good thing.
Very interesting. All right. And Jamil, let's see. Tonight I have number 21 in the spirituality suit, insight and wisdom. Wisdom is the successful application of knowledge using experience and understanding. Insight is discernment in seeing the underlying truth. This may be a time to look deep into your inner character and underlying truth to understand motives and reasons. Insight, wisdom, and acceptance of the true nature of a present situation or individual is necessary to gain a deeper understanding as well as to discover potential solutions.
I got the Three of Diamonds to me, which is, you know, my old teacher, my late teacher Magda would say it's the church card, but we, of course, we evolved a little bit from that, and it's more about that place of affirmation, that place of prayer, that place of meditation. So that insight, wisdom, that with the Three of Diamonds, it's getting comfort in what you know to be true for yourself. In that meditative state, in that calm state where you know, you just know. I don't know how else to say it, Michael. It's not a thinking or I feel, it's just, I just know. And that's where your insight and wisdom is, Jamil. So if you're encountering something in life today, stick with what you know inside. And I can't emphasize that enough. You know, when I do readings or I sit with people, it's just something I know. And I'm comfortable with that. I don't think it, I don't feel it. And then, of course, my job then is to translate it. How does that translate into everyday life? And I think that might be part of where you're at, Jamil. So go to that knowingness in yourself, your own insights, and apply yourself in the wisest of ways based on what you know, but keeping an open mind.
I like it. And yeah. Translating is the hardest part. I do not envy you that task. But quick shout out that our card keeper, Wendy, who tracks the cards pulled and looks for patterns, saw that Jamil had this card on March 22nd, not that long ago. Dr. Edward had a repeat. He had this same card that he had drawn on January 11th. So thanks for pointing that out. And Dr. Mike, so happy to have you with us. Tonight I have number 6. It's in the Respect for Free Will suit. I dropped the book. And let's see. Boundaries. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
Well, you know, it's kind of this is an interesting puzzle for me, Mike, because I got the Wheel of Fortune in support of boundaries. Like, what is that? you know, it's like, Boundaries, but take chances. Take chances within the boundaries or exceed the boundaries. So this, Dr. Mike, I want to say to you, you know, we only dream as much as our reality has taught us to think. And sometimes we push beyond that. And so it's like, allow yourself to have a more open mind. And although there are boundaries within boundaries and blah, blah, there's rules and so on, is think bigger, more. So whatever it is that you're taking on right now, open your mind to think bigger, more. Now is the time to, that Wheel of Fortune is saying, take chances. You know, be a little more unconventional in a sense. And think beyond what your reality has taught you, that your limitations were. That's exciting.
I like that. I like that. And another interesting repeat, Dr. Mike had the Inner Oracle Card Boundaries on February 15th. Thank you for that, Wendy. All right. So we have Kathy next. I have number 17, Reinvention. Let's see. Nothing is more powerful or transformative than self-reinvention resulting in a personal identity foundation shift. Far-reaching and profound, such a personal reinvention shifts the foundation of your self-concept from external to internal, which in turn is vital to your future success and happiness. Re-examine your core values, ensuring they are healthy. Answer the questions, what do I call a good day, and what else in my life should be reinvented?
Well, another puzzle for me, Kathy, I got the Jack of Spades, which is sometimes an irritated force. And as you're reinventing yourself, it may be that you might have a little opposition to how you're changing. So I asked for another card, and I got the Four of Hearts, and that's opportunity. So what I want to say to you is, as you are growing and changing, it doesn't mean spill your guts and tell everybody everything, but don't forget to educate others as you've changed your mind so that they don't become irritated or fearful or so on. You know, Michael, you know how it's sometimes we have friends that, oh, I'm really happy for you, but what does that mean to me? How is that going to affect me?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, when have you ever had a discussion with a friend where they had a great opportunity or a wonderful chance to move to a different city and pursue a dream of theirs? And that's wonderful, but it also means you're not going to see them. I mean, it's impossible not to have a reflection like that.
I know. So that's the kind of thing, Kathy. It's like you're changing and somebody's saying, well, how does that affect me? So make sure that, I would say, kind of inform others, that make them feel a little bit safe and comfortable that, you know, it's just your work in progress. And we all are together. So
absolutely.
I hope that makes sense, Kathy, in some way. We have Kevin next, I think.
All right. I have wild card number 6, entropy. Let's see. Within the cycle of life, there are useful energies, or low entropy, that can wane to uselessness, or high entropy. Their energy stands still, and their entropy increases. They no longer give value to the evolution of life. This can include an attitude or behavior that requires adjustment to, once again, take a new step in renewal and rebirth, thus lowering one's entropy. When one seeks to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that one lowers their personal entropy. The world is a better place.
You know, Kevin, I want to say the Six of Clubs here is, I love that. It's celebration, it's opportunity, it's social, it's changes. But watch your entropy. You know, one of my friends was recently recovering from COVID, and I said, watch your battery. And they said, what? I said, you can feel really good, but if you expend too much energy, you're going to run your battery real low. So you have to monitor yourself. Only put out as much energy as you're allowed without kind of caving. And I want to say that same thing as you're really excited and you're moving forward. Make sure you keep your entropy, your vibrational frequency intact, Kevin. Make sure it's still in line. So don't let it get thrown off kilter in a way. So I hope that makes sense in a way. It's just keep your energy flow in a good way and don't get too far ahead of yourself. You know, kind of think of ourselves as a graph, you know, where the highs are way above mm-hmm. and the lows are way down. And we want to kind of, you know, waft along the line of our moods and abilities to manage things rather than going way up and way down. And I think, Kevin, you've come off of, you know, a challenging time in your life, and now's the time to balance your energy, even though there's some really great things going on. I'm excited for you. That's for sure.
Love it. Good advice always. All right.
We have Dr. Jeff next.
Dr. Jeff, I have number 33, preference over principle. A mark of knowledge and wisdom is knowing when and how to offer an opinion or voice a complaint. If it is a matter of preference, yield. If it is a matter of principle, policy, or law, stand firm. It's important to know when and where to pick your battles. Be selective regarding the areas in which you invest your energy.
Six of hearts in that, Jeff. You know, that's generally about family, community, socializing, and preference versus principle. The thing that comes to mind the most is when my kids became adults, I had to refrain from giving too much advice because it's none of my business, you know. And it's allowing others to have the right to their own opinion, even though I'm thinking, ooh. The only time I do intervene is when I see red flags, and that to me is danger. Like, this is going to go so wrong, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And then the mother in me, and in this case for you, the father or the, you know, the overseer would come in and say, oh, this is a wrong decision. So preference over principle is something always to take heed of when we're, when we think we have an answer. But we also have to look at that for ourselves. Am I looking at this through a preferential eye? Or, you know, am I seeing the real principles that are, you know, intact that I need to look at? So hope that makes sense, Jeff. I feel like you're on the verge of something. So just keep that preference principle thing in check and you'll be good.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. We have our card keeper herself, Wendy, up next. Wendy, I've been looking forward to pulling your card. I know that you would say that you're hoping for some good cards tonight, and I'm mm-hmm. excited to see what I pull. Also, just want to say I'm glad that what we were talking about earlier connected. I'd say hold on to that. Remember those victories that you had, and remember the power that gives you. And one last thing, I just want to say how much you're appreciated here, because, you know, you reached out, thought of and reached out first with Dr. Edward. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you checking in on me when I had food poisoning. From a restaurant that shall not be named, rhymes with McDonald's, but we're not going to get into that. But, Wendy, I appreciated that so much. So, looking forward to seeing what this card is. Pulling from the middle of the deck, I have, powerful, number 24, Truth. There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction.
I got the Chariot, Wendy. Now, the Chariot simply is the positive and negative forces. Think of them as a team of horses, according to the Rider-Waite, you know, thing. In this case, it's Egyptian sphinxes, but think of horses. Positive and negative, and you're the driver. So you know your truth, you know what you want, you know who you are, and you keep moving forward, like, no matter what. And something that came to mind, Wendy, is, you know, when my kids were very young, reasonably young, my oldest is early teens, mid-teens, and I moved us, packed us all up from the city and moved to a farm. People thought I was out of my mind. And I said, no, we're going. I'm done. I'm going to go raise chickens. But I was following my own path, see, and what I knew to do for myself, no matter what other people were saying and what their opinions were. And some of it was rather harsh, I might say. But that's what I'm feeling for you too, is following your truth, following what you know to be correct action for yourself, no matter what others might think. So I'm just being your cheerleader here. That's all. So there you go.
I love it. All right. And old friend of the broadcast, Audra, so happy to have you with you. So happy to see that you're a fellow fan of Brooklyn 99. All right. I have number 22, Think for Yourself. Better understanding one's own mind brings one closer to honesty and self-responsibility. Thinking for yourself prevents being swayed by the potentially unhealthy thinking of others, as well as outside popular beliefs simply for popularity's sake. If you don't think for yourself, you sacrifice your identity for someone else's identity. This may be a time to exercise critical thinking in order to best determine and listen to your own truth.
Well, this is a little different vibe here, Michael. Audra, that think for yourself, the first card I pulled was the Ten of Spades. So think of the Ten of Swords, and that could be a disappointment. And for a moment of feeling a bit of grief, you know, and that could be the loss of an idea, the loss of a belief, loss of a human being. And I don't mean, you know, by death. It could just be what you thought somebody was your friend and not, you know, that kind of thing. So it's thinking for yourself and being able to sort through, you know, those brush strokes of truths that come in that has, you know, us change our minds. So as a support card, I decided I would pick up another card, which came out to be the Ace of Wands, the Ace of Clubs. And that's achievement through your own efforts. So that think for yourself, staying on your own path, even though you feel like you might be an island at times and looking around saying, does nobody see what I see? You know, is nobody hearing what I hear? It's just keep going on what you know to be true.
So well said. And I think we can all empathize with that. I mean, sometimes we all look around and think, are we seeing the same thing? Are we looking at the same reality? And then if you're me, I'm going to question, wait, am I the one that's wrong?
Well, I mean, we've all done it.
Yeah, right? We have.
We've all said, you know, how many people in this room and you don't see that?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's like realizing that you've been saying preface wrong this whole time, but
yeah, I know. But it's just kind of,
well,
through this conversation, I know there's a change, Michael. I always have a favorite pen, and my favorite pen ran out of ink, and I had to grab another one, and I thought, oh, that's a sign. I don't know what it's a sign of, but what's also interesting, I haven't had this for quite a while now, but I started seeing repeating numbers, sequential numbers again. So if anybody else has seen that, I'd sure like to hear from you or note it in the chat. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit next week. I'm not sure, but 555, 606, 404, you know, 1111. These things have started again.
What was the very first thing that you had mentioned? I was typing something out real quick, and I didn't quite catch the full thing of it.
A shift because I had a new pen.
Thank you. Yes, I heard you mention pen, which reminded me of a story, and then I lost it for a second.
No, it's
and
like
I gotta tell you. I mean, we're kind of simpatico because, ironically, where I work as an office, a client had come in. I had given him, you know, a pen in a different office to sign something, and then I walked out, and then I came back, and I said, "Oh, do you have my pen?" And they're like, "Oh, I didn't realize it was yours. I gave it to the client."
Oh,
and
no.
And I've been using this pen for like 4 years, you know.
Oh, I hate that.
So I called the client and I thought, no, it's not like this, you know, extremely nice pen. I didn't even leave a message, but when they called back, my colleague had felt bad, so she told them what it was about, and the client came back in with it. It's like, oh, I would have done the same thing. Here you go. It was just one of those things.
You have that favorite pen.
Yep.
And but they just don't last for 2 years anymore without running out of ink. Yours lasted four. That's amazing.
No, I have ink refills.
Oh, There you go.
And that's the story for life. Always find your ink refill for the soul. I think that's what we can go out on, right?
Well, Deb is saying in the chat, numbers repeating all the time these days. So it indicates to me another vibrational shift. Oh, Jamil says the same thing. He said, I've definitely been seeing repeating numbers for well, pretty often. Okay. Dr. Edward, he said... he's seeing 1018 repeatedly on his computer's clock throughout a time period. He said that's his birthday, 1015. Well, mine is 1025, and I've seen 1025 come up on my clock.
For the record, 1018.
Sorry, 1018.
For Dr. Edward, don't want somebody to send him a card on the wrong day just in case. But
sorry about that,
excited. I know this is a common one, but I don't know. It's like daily. You know, I'll look and it'll be 11:11. I don't understand why, but that's a common one for me. I know that's a popular one out there, but
I think there's a shift in the matrix.
They better be reprogramming good. They need to bring back a few things. You know.
You know, as always, we did miss you last week, Michael. But I'm so glad you're feeling better. Glad for this group. Thank you for the conversation. Everybody, thanks for the participation. And,
absolutely.
I look forward to coming back next week.
I do too. You know, I hated to miss last week, and
that's all right.
I waited till, kind of late in the day before I kind of made the call, and it was more of a, hey, you think we could do this? Because if not, it's okay. I can do it if you already sent the notice. I needed to sleep, and I needed to... be close to a restroom. Anyway, so thank you so much. I'm looking forward to kind of getting into this topic of, these the patterns, numbers, and things that you had mentioned earlier. I'm looking forward to that discussion next week, and I'm looking forward to seeing you all. I'm looking forward to coming back and getting this kind of group of the curious individuals exploring life. I love it. So thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. Thank you, Dr. Vicky, for your wonderful thoughts and contributions, as always. And until next week... listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.